the perfect spot for nature and good wine, the importance of Spider-Man and Never Too Young to Die, and where Gene Simmons likes to hang out. All this and more on today's How Did This Get Made? Minisode, hit the theme! What's up, dum-dums? It's me, Paul Scheer, back in a really weird record situation. I'm in a hotel in San Francisco. I'm sorry this is late. It's been a crazy week, but I am here and I'm ready to talk to you. Welcome to the How Did This Get Made mini episode, where I tell you all the info that you need for next week's podcast and all the things that you might have missed from last week's episode, which, of course, was Never Too Young to Die. And it's a movie that I believe is in my pantheon of favorite How Did This Get Made movies, right up there with The Room, Miami Connection. And I would say this, those are my top three at this point. I mean, yes, there will always be Face Off, there will always be Con Air and the Fast movies, but these are the gems that I never knew of. Maybe I'll put The Apple in this as well. The Apple's pretty good. Hercules in New York. Oh, so many. We're coming up on our 200th episode, people. What should we do for it? Someone just told us that, and I was like, oh, shit, we should plan something. But I guess nowadays, people do 200 episodes in like the first year of their podcast, so maybe we're just really behind the times. Anyway, enough about me. Let's hear from you. You ask me questions, I give you answers. It's time for the Explanation Helpline.
The Explanation Hopeline is here for you. Just make a call to Paul and he'll tell you what to do. 619-BAULASK. He'll give you great advice, then he'll send you on your way.
That's right, people. You call, I answer. 619-PAULASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. Here we go. First caller.
Hey, Paul. My name's Emma. I have kind of a guy question because I don't have any guy friends except for this one who I have kind of a crush on, and I'm about to move to the city that he lives in for other reasons. I'm not crazy. But I was wondering kind of what do I do or how should I behave to kind of manage my expectations? Like, should I shoot my shot? Should I be expecting to hang out with him a lot, or should I try to keep my expectations low so that I don't just end up feeling disappointed? I don't know. I feel like your advice as a guy maybe would be helpful. So thanks, Paul.
Ooh, Emma, I do not know if I am the right person to ask. I think you should be asking a woman this question. Here's what I would say. First of all, the fact that you're even asking this question is a good sign. It means you're not a crazy person. Play it cool. Be low key. Hang. Suss out the sitch. That's what I say. Suss out the sitch. You got to see what this guy is like. Is he as cool as you imagine him to be? Just slow play this. You don't have to hit anything fast. And that way, if you decide that you want to move forward, you're confident in that decision. But also, if you get the signal that he's not into moving forward, you don't wreck a relationship in a new city. That's what I would say. And then I would also go on to say that, you know, trust your gut. If you're feeling it, feel it, and then go for it. Act on your gut. Trust it. Don't second guess yourself, but take it slow. Anyway, that's mixed messages, but who cares? All right, next caller.
Hi, Paul. It's Erin calling from Chicago. I'm having trouble thinking of ideas for my honeymoon in June of next year, and I think you're the right person to help me out. We love nature and drinking good wine, and we're thinking it might be nice to do something in the U.S. or Canada. I would truly appreciate any suggestions you might have, and you train of the show. Thanks. Bye.
Erin, all right, if you're looking for nature and good wine, I would say go to France. Enjoy the countryside of France. Oh, beautiful France. But if that's a little bit out of the price range, Napa Valley. Dude, hit up Napa Valley for beautiful hikes and delicious wine. I went there for the first time just a few years ago, and it is awesome. You will have the best fucking time. Go do it. It's easy. That's it. I have nothing funny to say besides like, boom, duh, hit it. Next caller.
Paul, hey, it's Ian and Charlotte. Question for you. At what point in your life did you realize that you were going to get into improv comedy? That show business is what you wanted to get into. I'm just curious if it's something you knew from a very early age. I think I've read that you got into it fairly early, like college time frame. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Just wondering when you knew and when you decided, yeah, I'm going to make a go of this. Love the show. Thanks.
Ian, so funny you asked me this question. I was asked this today in an interview and it kind of stumped me. I didn't know that being a performer was an option. I loved Saturday Night Live and I really wanted to be like Eddie Murphy. I thought he was the funniest person in the world, but my instinct wasn't like, I want to do that. It was just like, he makes me laugh. I want to do that. I want to make people laugh. But I guess even that is a little bit more forward than where I was. I remember as a kid, I would like write stand-up specials based on other people's stand-up specials, just steal the jokes and then perform them for my family or make them watch me perform them. But it was just like jokes that were too mature for me and also too like weird for relatives. So it was a real odd time. Anyway, when I saw this improv group called Chicago City Limits, it just blew my mind. I was like, I want to do that. It's like acting, but you don't have to memorize. And I got involved with them. And then when I stumbled into the UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade, it blew my mind. It changed everything. UCB just, I was like, wow, that's comedy and improv. And I never looked back from there. So there you go. I hope that answered your question. Next caller.
Hey, Paul. This is Nick from Oregon. I just had a question about you that you might be able to answer. Me and my wife are thinking about starting a family, but we want to go on one more epic vacation. And we're trying to figure out where we want to go. Guys, have you and June, I know, started up family, so you're just wondering if you could do it all over again before you start a family, where would you go? All right, love the show. Love all you guys do, and I'm trying to support you when I can. All right, bye.
Nick, I am right there with you. An epic vacation needs to be taken before you bring a child into the world. Big question, first of all. Is your wife already pregnant? If she is, that sucks because you can't drink. I mean, unless you don't drink, and that's fine too. And it doesn't suck that you can't drink. I'm just saying it just limits things that you can do because when your wife is pregnant, you can't just totally just go to town, go on these crazy acts. You have to like, look out for, you know, resting and taking care and everything like that. You still can do a great baby moon, whatever. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. You want an epic vacation? I think you need to do like one of those like classic trips. Like what I always wanted to do was I wanted to get on the Orient Express. I thought that would be so cool. It was cost prohibitive. But June and I, we went to Italy and it was amazing. We had an amazing, amazing time there. I would say like drive cross country. It would really put a test to your relationship, but do something epic. Just don't go to one spot. You can always go to one spot, but bouncing around, like go to Japan, go around the countryside. I don't know what you can afford, but I think you can do something really, really fun just by kind of, just doing something adventurous and that has multiple stops if you can take that time off from work. All right. I think that is it. For the explanation, Hope Line, you guys did a great job. If you didn't hear your voicemail played this week, I'm sorry. It was not picked. But you can call back next week at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. Call me with anything. Like you said, I'm giving people love, vacation, life advice. It's all here. 619-PAUL-ASK. Couple of announcements. Right now, if you're hearing this and it's Friday, we are in Denver tomorrow, so come out and see us tomorrow if you're in Denver. We also are going to be in Los Angeles on September 15th at Largo, so definitely check us out there. We have a special guest for the first show and a really cool guest for the second show as well. Plus, I'm in a brand new movie called Slice, and the trailer just came out. Slice has Chance the Rapper in it, Zazie Beetz from Atlanta, Chris Parnell, myself, Joe Keery from Stranger Things. Check it out, Slice trailer. Available online now. It's the number one trending trailer right now on Apple Trailers. So, yeah. What about that? Okay. What are we watching next week? Well, we are going from Stamos to Statham. Okay, as we see the killer prehistoric shark film, The Meg. That's right. Last week we saw Never Too Young to Die, and this week we are seeing The Meg, a movie that is in theaters now. We don't often do this, but we felt like an exception needed to be made. IMDb describes it as, after escaping an attack by what he claims was a 70-foot shark, Jonas Taylor must confront his fears to save those trapped in a sunken submersible. Dun, dun, dun. That's a terrible description of the plot, but take a listen to the trailer.
What you people discovered is bigger than we ever thought possible.
How big is that thing?
It was the largest shark that ever existed.
A living fossil.
Thought to have been extinct over 2 million years.
Wrong.
Megalodon.
He's kidding, right?
Come on, it's a motherfucking Meg. It's in theaters everywhere. Go see it if you'd like. I don't think that you'll need to see it to enjoy the episode, but it's definitely a fun one. And we brought back two of our favorites to talk about the Meg. So we're really looking forward to talking about it next week. Go out and see the Meg. You know, buy a ticket for Crazy Rich Asians and then go see the Meg. Okay. Here we go, people. Let's get back into Never Too Young to Die. There were so many things said, and I want to hear from you on corrections and omissions.
There's something rather spiffing about corrections and omissions, but some people take it a bit too far, like the simple girl on Amazon that gave this film 5 stars.
Corrections and omissions are culled from the earwolf.com message boards. I know these message boards have been totally effed. I'm sorry about that. We're trying to fix it. I think it's getting better because you guys are actually able to post now, even though it's complicated to get to where you are, but I appreciate your tenacity in getting there. You are all great. I want to correct something I said, and people brought this up. I said that George Lazenby was the worst Bond. I didn't mean that. I meant he was the least impressive Bond. I love On Her Majesty's Secret Service. As a matter of fact, I did an entire episode about On Her Majesty's Secret Service with the James Bonding podcast. It is one of my favorite James Bond movies. I think that he is actually very good. But if you're putting a lineup of Bonds based on I know that person, I know that person, I know that person, George Lazenby, I think, would have less facial recognition than Timothy Dalton. And that's all I was saying. So I apologize to anyone out there offended by my George Lazenby comment. It was just a wrong turn of phrase. I don't mean to upset you. Sam Trano writes, a correction for Jason. He keeps on saying that the wrestlers just came out of nowhere and weren't sharing the space with the gymnasts, but that's not true. During the montage, where they play the Stargrove song in the background, you can see someone set up a mat on the spring floor for some reason, and two guys are wrestling on it. There's no reason for them to be doing this there on the specialized gymnastics equipment. I mean, when all they need is a floor, but it sets up the next shot where they watch Stargrove on the trampoline, which is also the spring floor for some unknown reason. Yeah, but okay, I get it. I also don't understand why these wrestlers who practice next to the gymnasts are getting so fucking mad at Stargrove being good. I mean, he's not doing anything. He's not threatening them. But maybe he is with his masculinity. Maybe the wrestlers don't feel confident in their masculinity and what they're doing. And then when they see a guy doing such exquisite body work, they feel threatened in some way. And they need to kind of humiliate him or beat him down. Oh, it's so sad. So many things going on in this movie. So many levels. This is Scorsese levels. Okay. Oh, this is interesting. From Francis Ritho 3, a minor point, but the script Jason reads says God Joy, but the subtitles on the film says Gut Joy, which I think was a term Kerouac coined. Doesn't change it that much. God Joy, Gut Joy. Interesting. You know, there's also another weird subtitle thing. I'll let our caller take it away.
Hey, Paul. It's Connor in Queens. I just watched Never Too Young to Die. The subtitles on, and I know you like finding the little discrepancies between those and the actual speech. And in the moment where Minky and his buddy are beating up John Stamos in the farm in Ojai, his buddy says, "I'm going to make you bleed." But the subtitles say, "Fuck you, meat. Fuck you, meat." Yeah, thanks for making my Fridays better for a long time. Thanks. Bye.
Honestly, I think just the fact that these people who do the subtitles, that they completed the film, it speaks volumes about their character. I mean, they are a better person than me to be like, oh, who cares? Like, I would get like 60% of this movie just wrong just because of boredom and the fact that people were just saying garbage, literally garbage. Josh G writes, Paul alluded to this, but I can't get over how bonkers the chewing gum bug was. I mean, one, you can't actually chew the gum with the bug inside it. It's just a thin circle piece of gum wrapped around a metal device. Even if you could, the way you'd be contorting your mouth to chew around the metal would look so awkward that it would defeat the whole purpose of surreptitiously disguising the device. You know, you're going to be so obvious when you try to extricate the bug from the gum. You're way better off popping a regular piece of gum in and then slipping the bug from your pocket into the chewed up wad when no one's looking. Number two, since Cliff was just a normal college student, why did the bug have to be disguised in the first place? Designing bazookas, etc. is crazy, but you could say Cliff was a pyro. I mean, those weapons were out in the open for all to see and apparently not to suspend him for. Disguising a listening device is specific to spy gadgetry a la James Bond. What did Cliff plan to eavesdrop on? I mean, so crucially that he would go through the trouble of disguising it as a piece of gum. If I found out that my roommate planned to eavesdrop on people for fun, I'm not sure I'd trust him. Number three, I hate the wording that Cliff uses. Chew it up. Gross. Thank you, Josh G. This one's from Jim Cotta. Just a note on Karate Dog. Pat Morita, a.k.a. Mr. Miyagi, is actually in Karate Dog. He plays a character named Chin Lee. Thank you very much. Taylor Ann Photo writes, I have to disagree with June on the amount of time it would have taken Gene to do that eye makeup in the helicopter. I do agree it wasn't the best job done, and it does look rushed, but that was for sure at least a 15-minute apply job. It takes me around 15 to 20 minutes to do my eyes, and I'm not doing anything nearly extravagant as that. And if you ask any drag queen how long it normally takes them to do their makeup, they say on average 2 hours. Of course, that's meticulously applying everything on the face perfectly. So if you just focus on the eyes and rush it, it sounds like that could have taken about 15 minutes at least. Taylor Ann taking down June's expertise. But you know what? I totally agree with you. It would definitely take at least 15 minutes. Two eyes, 100%. Come on. Crash Bang Boom writes, as for the incinerator Vanity was tortured in, it appears to be a brickyard facility. So it was an industrial kiln used to cure clay into bricks. So number one, the temperature dial would not go by the hundreds as bricks are fired by 1200 Celsius, roughly 2000 degrees Fahrenheit. Two, the human body shuts down at about 250 degrees, and at 700, she would be on fire. The metal table would be glowing red as the cuffs holding her down. And probably the most baffling, three, why would someone install a two-way intercom in an oven? Thank you, Crash Bam Boom. Ryan says brings up a very interesting point. He goes, I was surprised to hear that this movie cost $3 million and there are some big production pieces and special effects in the film. That was way more shocking in comparison to Yes, Giorgio, that somehow cost $19 million and looked like utter dog shit. You know, that is interesting to think about it like that. I guess, you know, maybe one was made in the studio system and one was made without. Maybe Pavarotti just required a lot more. I mean, Pavarotti is definitely getting a large chunk, but not millions and millions. Interesting. Okay, good point. Being All Fishies writes that I am yet another person for whom the reveal worked perfectly for, and it was awesome. I think it's more obvious if you go into the film knowing Gene Simmons is the big name, so you're looking for him, and also if you know what he looks like. Well, you know what? You're probably right. But I mean, you can see that he's the same character from scene to scene. Anyway, I'm losing this battle. Okay, this is a really interesting, longer piece. It doesn't have to do anything to do with the movie, but just Gene Simmons. Smig writes, Gene Simmons being a dick should be discussed a little bit more because I've been a Kiss fan for a good few years, but holy shit, isn't Gene Simmons a constant stream of ridiculousness? So here's a story that should further show you what a tool this man is. When Penelope Spheeris was putting together interviews for The Fall of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years, she was asking various guys in heavy metal to do interviews for the movie, and you know, where they would want to be interviewed. Ozzy was interviewed at his home and insisted he wanted to wear his bathrobe because he was really pleased with the bathrobe. Lemmy wanted to be interviewed at the Whiskey, and guys just picked where they wanted to go. Gene Simmons can't help but be Gene Simmons. He was approached by Penelope and he said, "I'll do the interview. However, I don't want to do anything tacky or embarrassing." Penelope said, "That's fine. I wouldn't want you to do anything you would think is embarrassing. So where do you want to do the interview?" Now, was it in a sprawling mansion? A mansion that Chris Jericho said was a huge museum for all things Kiss? No. Was it in one of the studios that Kiss works in? Nope. Well, did he didn't want it to be tacky, right? But maybe it's his favorite place to hang out? No. Gene Simmons, being Jim Simmons, okay, made the interview take place in a fucking lingerie store. I think that this story from Smig sums up Gene Simmons perfectly, and it's a great insight to Gene in a fucking lingerie store. Oh, Gene. But you know what? In many respects, there's so many winners here, so many great people with so many amazing points, but I'm going to give it this week to the great Taylor Ann Photo, because you know what? She stood up to a giant. To June Diane, she said, "You know what, June? You're wrong. I know more about eye makeup than you do." And you know what? For that, Taylor Ann, you win. All right, people, we have so much more coming up. Paul's Pick of the Week, which you're going to really love. A 2-minute review of Skyscraper from Movie Bitches, and just a little bit more. So stay tuned. All right, it is now time for my pick of the week. Paul's Picks. I'm not going to make any bones about this, people. I love Mission Impossible Fallout. I went through all the Mission Impossibles. I've talked about this with you on the previous episodes, and I stumbled upon a podcast that blew my mind. It's the Empire Movie Spoilers Podcast, and it's a 7-hour long interview with Chris McQuarrie, and it is one of the most fascinating things I have ever, ever listened to. He goes into micro and macro detail about making a big budget blockbuster, and the stories behind this movie are utterly fascinating. I know you think 7 hours, oh my God. I will tell you, I still want to hear more. The stories are great. They're candid. They're entertaining. It just flies by. You will not be disappointed by this amazing, amazing interview with Chris McQuarrie, the director and writer of Mission Impossible Fallout. He also wrote Way of the Gun, one of my favorites, Usual Suspects, great film, and has been involved in the Mission franchises since Ghost Protocol. Get on it. You will love it. Oh, you know what, brother? I'm recording this in a hotel room, so excuse where this is dropping in right now. But in the beginning of this episode, I teased that there's a connection to Spider-Man in the movie Never Too Young to Die, and we didn't know why that connection was there. This should have gone to Corrections and Omissions, but it's going right here, right now. Take a listen to this.
Hey, Paul. Tom from St. Paul here. Hey, during your discussion of Never Too Young to Die, you discussed the appearance of the Spider-Man logo on a character's clothing. Now, I have no idea if this was intentional or not, but I sort of wonder if this was a subtle shout-out to Kiss fans. As you may or may not know, Gene Simmons claims to have invented the infamous heavy metal devil horn salute. However, many of us know that Gene Simmons is a longtime comic book junkie, and his so-called devil horn salute is actually mimicry of Spider-Man's hand position when he spins a web. And Simmons apparently all but admitted this early in Kiss's career, but the devil horn story is the one that eventually gained the most traction. Anyway, it's just a theory. Thanks, Paul.
Whoa. First of all, did not know that Gene Simmons took credit for the devil horns. What? And that's from Spider-Man too? This is crazy and blows my mind even more. You know what? You might have won the award there, Tom, because this is a really great correction and omission. Unfortunately, it is not in the correction and omission section. Why not? Because of me. Operator error. Sorry, everybody. I'm in a hotel. I'm doing this on a bed. I'm trying to put it all together before I go to sleep. It's Thursday night. It's 11 o'clock. But now, take a listen to Movie Bitches, reviewing a movie that will inevitably end up on this podcast. It is The Rock in Skyscraper, and they're reviewing it in 2 minutes. And give it up for the Movie Bitches, who just put out some great content on their YouTube page. Go check it out at the Movie Bitches on YouTube. Take it away, Avril and Andrew. Go.
Cheers! Welcome to Movie Bitches!
Tonight we're reviewing Skyscraper! So we saw the trailer for this movie a long time ago.
Yeah!
And we were like, oh boy, that looks like garbage. The Rock's in it, he jumps off of a crane into a building. Yeah, gonna have to see that.
Apparently, like someone of course did the physics of it. He would have to have run faster than Usain Bolt to have made this jump.
Good.
The Rock.
Good.
Who, you know, is beefy, but not dexterous, I would say. There was often times I was like, you know who I don't think is good at rock climbing? The Rock. So it starts, and you know it's a bad sign when you can't tell when the movie started because the CGI looks so bad that you think it might possibly still be, like, the production logo. Is this still some, like, off-brand Chinese production company logo? Or is this the movie? This is a bad sign. Nev Campbell shows up, and I was like, yes, Nev Campbell!
I will say this, I was afraid that she was just gonna kind of appear and then be gone.
Oh, yeah.
She had a pretty big role in this movie.
She was great. A good mom.
Yep.
She was a naval
surgeon. She was a very good mom.
A veteran.
Yeah, she is a smart woman.
She was great.
Very pleased.
No complaints about her.
This was one of the best female characters I've seen in a shitty movie in a very, very, very long time.
That is true. I mean, it is ripping off Die Hard left and right. He, like, jumps off the building while he's tied to something. There's, like, a cop who's outside the building who's trying to help him. And they're always good to finally meet you in person, even though we've had no dialogue or experiences with each other. And you're like, what the fuck? It was a perfectly decent 80s-ish action movie. Yep. I feel like the villain certainly could have been beefed up. The plan certainly could have been explained better. Yep. The Rock could have been given a little more to play with. It was just a little more serious than I was expecting.
Yes.
Still fun, possibly worth watching, definitely bring in a drink, and Nev Campbell looks great.
Great. Cheers to Nev Campbell.
Amazing. Cannot wait to watch this movie. But you must now go out and see The Meg. Go enjoy it. We'll be talking about it next week. And in the meantime, visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/hdtgm. Visit us on Twitter at hdtgm. Go to our website at hdtgminfo.com. And if you've not checked out my newest podcast, Unspooled with Amy Nicholson, it's kind of like the inverse of this one. We talk about good movies. We just did Singing in the Rain. It's awesome. And we had Ed Brubaker on the week before talking about Double Indemnity. Please remember to rate and review this podcast. And a big thanks to Kelly, Josh, Cody, Avril, Kyle, July, all the engineers at Earwolf, and the staff of Hotel Diva in San Francisco for letting me record this and not making me stop talking to myself in my room. All right, everybody, we'll see you next week for Meg.